The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I, for one, can't wait for the Yankees and the Red Sox playoff series. And as I've been saying all morning long, I know for a number of you, it's just, you know, it's hard to grasp. It just feels like it's, oh, of course, this is what Major League Baseball wants. And rightfully so. These are two storied franchises. But believe me, if you can get into a rivalry, even if it doesn't involve your teams, this is a rivalry I'd like you to invest into in the ALDS. Five games, they can be quick. This series could be over very, very quickly if one team isn't careful. But when you know about this history, about these two teams, and about some of the things that they have done against each other in not only the postseason, but in the regular season as well, how much animosity there is between the two fan bases, this is going to be fun to watch. And it can be fun to watch from the outside without being directly involved in it. You go back to 2003 and the Red Sox with Theo Epstein trying to get that team a World Series championship. He gets them into the ALCS. He's got Pedro Martinez on the mound. They make a decision. Grady Little makes a decision, you know, to take Pedro out. What does it lead to? It leads to Aaron Boone hitting a home run and getting and taking the Red Sox out of the postseason and sending the Yankees to the World Series where they would lose to the Miami Marlins. That was a series based on small decisions. You go to 2004 and John Sterling famously calling when Mariano Rivera was on the mound in the ninth inning. Who would have thunk it? The Boston Red Sox are three outs away from being swept by the Yankees. Who would have thunk it? Because even he couldn't believe that that Yankee team in 2004 was going to sweep the Red Sox in four games. But David Roberts steals a base, and the rest is history. The Yankees blow four straight games in the Red Sox to lose. And that just catapults the Red Sox into the World Series where they sweep out the Cardinals and win for the first time since 1918. But don't miss this for a second. It wasn't the Cardinals that got the Boston Red Sox that championship. It was beating the Yankees that got them that championship, because after that, there was no team. You could have put together a National League All-Star team, and they weren't going to beat the Yankees based on the Red Sox based on the high they felt coming out of the ALCS. It's part three coming up, and it's going to start soon.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
The two Major League Baseball games today, they get started on the schedule. The Rockies and the Brewers will be later today. Oh, and I think the Brewers, if I'm not mistaken, based on my preview reading, are going to do the same thing the Oakland A's did. They're going to do the old bullpenning against the Rockies. And going to start a reliever and pitch him a couple innings, or pitch people like one inning or two innings. And then the Atlanta Braves and the Dodgers, that'll be later on tonight. Those are the two games. And then all four games will be in existence on Friday. I don't know. Bullpenning is going to start
Friday?
On a football Friday. We got Major League Baseball for you on a Friday night. And the Astros and the Cleveland Indians start things off in the afternoon, followed by the Rockies and the Brewers, Red Sox and Yankees at Fenway Park, and then your nightcap, the Dodgers and the Atlanta Braves.
See, that's what MLB wanted. They wanted all these. They wanted West Coast games. They wanted East Coast games. Like, oh, it's perfect all the way across the board.
Yep. Games in the Midwest, Rockies and Brewers. Yankees and Red Sox eating up the Northeast. Braves taking over the South.
Yep. They probably would have rather have had D.C. instead of the Braves.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true. Although the Braves, man, that Braves footprint is pretty big.
No, I'm not taking anything away from the Braves. I'm just saying, like, as far as star power.
When I dated my wife in the mid-1990s, we would talk sports and stuff. And so, what's your favorite baseball team? She goes, Atlanta, because the Rays hadn't arrived in Tampa yet where she grew up. She goes, the Atlanta Braves. I go, geez, you're like 8 hours from Atlanta. But that was it. That was the only thing they had. Miami was relatively new franchise. And that was it. The Braves all over Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina. They got a big footprint. You know what else helped them was they were on TBS. Remember when Turner put the Braves on TBS and everybody in America got to watch them when they were terrible? They had slogans like Atlanta Braves baseball, still better than a root canal. Catch it. My favorite was Atlanta Braves baseball, mathematical elimination fever. They were awful, but they were on national TV. So you come home from school, if they were playing a day game, you could catch them on TV. They were on the Superstation. And then they got good. And then out of nowhere, they got good. Remember the early 90s when they went to the World Series and went from worst to first? And then they just kept
It was their rotation. That rotation was stupid.
They had Glavine and Maddox. In the early Smoltz. 90s, Smoltz. They had Steve Avery.
Yep.
Remember they had that racist John Rocker on the team?
Of course.
Remember that? And they could hit, too.
And they won all the NFC East
titles? Yeah, they kept winning.
NFC East, National League East.
Yeah, they kept winning. They kept going to the playoffs, and they would lose World Series. And then they finally won a World Series in 95. They beat the Cleveland Indians.
Yep, just before the Yankees took over.
Then the Yankees, then in 96... Atlanta played the Yankees. And in the first two games of that series that were in Yankee Stadium, the Braves crushed the Yankees in two games. And there was a lot of conversation. This might be the greatest baseball team ever assembled because they had everything. They had the rotation. They had the four-man rotation. They had relief pitchers. And they had bats. I mean, they could hit the ball. And so there was a lot of conversation about, this is the best team that ever happened. Joe Torre famously told George Steinbrenner, we're going to go to Atlanta. He goes, that's my town, George, because he had managed the Braves back when they were terrible back in the 80s. He says, that's my town, George. We're going to go down. We're going to win three straight. And we're going to come back here and win the World Series. They went down to Atlanta in game three and they won that game. And I think they had David Cone pitching in that game, and they won that game. And then the next game, they had Kenny Rogers pitching. He had one time pitched a perfect game for Texas, but they had Kenny Rogers. And they trailed by a lot in that game, and then they started coming back. And Jim Leyritz, and this is the one little baseball tip that I just learned because of that game. Jim Leyritz was at the plate. And Mark Wohlers was the pitcher for the Braves at the time. And he threw gas. I mean, he threw gas. And he was throwing fastballs to Leyritz. And Leyritz kept fouling straight back, right? He was fouling them off, but they were going straight back. And this is one of the things about Tim McCarver that I love. McCarver noticed that when you are fouling a ball straight back to the backstop, your timing is just a touch off. Right? You're just off by a little bit. And sure enough, He threw an off-speed pitch, just enough of an off-speed pitch that Leyritz caught up to it and hit a home run. I think it was a three-run home run that tied the game. And the Yankees won that game and tied the series at two. Game five, which was the final game at Fulton County Stadium. I was lucky enough to be there. I was in South Carolina at the time. My buddy had tickets, and we ended up going. Last game at Fulton County Stadium before they moved to Turner Field. It was a pitching duel between John Smoltz and Andy Pettitte. And it was a masterful game. If you like pitcher's duels, and I'm a huge fan of pitcher's duels, I love it when both pitchers are on, runs are hard to come by, guys got their stuff, they're painting the plate. Both Andy Pettitte and John Smoltz were completely on their game, but the Yankees won that one by just a hair, and then they went back to New York and won the series and then took off from there. But the Braves didn't go away. They were still... they lost to the Marlins in 97. And if you look up that series, that was the famous LeVon Hernandez was pitching for the Marlins. And in the umpire in one particular game gave Hernandez a strike zone as big as like a garage. It was insane what he was calling, how much space off the plate he was giving LeVon Hernandez. But they made it back to the World Series. They were in the World Series in 99 and played the Yankees again. But by that time, the Yankees were a juggernaut and swept them in four games. But the Braves had plenty of opportunities in their history to win World Series. They just never were able to capitalize. They only did it once. They should. They're like the Bears. Remember when the Bears won the Super Bowl and everyone said, oh, this is a dynasty, and they never won it again?
Yep.
That's Atlanta.
They didn't even really come close.
They didn't really come close. I think they got hurt. Like Jim McMahon got hurt the next year. And
well, that they ran into Giants took over. You know, and the Niners. Niners started getting better.
Yeah, the Giants went to the Super Bowl the next year after the Bears. So the Giants were making a run in that division, in that conference, I should say. The Braves were like that. Like 92, they lost to the Blue Jays. They lost to the Twins in 91 in the World Series. They lost to the Blue Jays. Didn't make it to the World Series in 93. Philadelphia did. No World Series in 94. Won it in 95. Lost to the Yankees in 96. Lost to the Marlins in 97 when the Marlins won the World Series. 98, the Padres went to the World Series. 99, they went back. So, like, the Braves had a whole decade where they were constantly at the top of their game, but they just managed one World Series with all that talent. Chipper Jones and the pitching line that they had. I mean, they were great. They were a really good baseball team. Really fun. And they did the tomahawk chop. Remember they had Deion Sanders too for early part of the early 90s.
Yep.
And Deion
Andrew
Sanders.
Jones.
Yeah. Deion, if I'm not mistaken, Deion Sanders played for the Atlanta Falcons too. Like in the early 90s. And I think at one point he was trying to do this.
But he did. He was doing both. I mean, I know what
he was doing both. Did he do? I got to look this up. I might look this up during the break. Did he? He was trying to pull off where he would play for the Falcons in a game, but then he would private jet to the Braves playoff game. And remember, oh, I got to look this up because now it's on. Tim McCarver was critical of that, and that's why Deion Sanders doused him with water. Remember, and Tim McCarver was like, it's a real man, Deion, real man. Because he was critical of Deion Sanders wanting to play in the NFL and then flying off to help the Braves play in the playoffs. He said, that's insane. You're in the playoffs. You dedicate your time and effort to the playoffs. I got to look that up because that's one of the more better stories of Atlanta Braves history. Braves and Dodgers tonight. That'll be Mike Foltynewicz against Hyunjin Ryu of the Dodgers, who's been great since coming off the DL in August. I hope I got his name right. 800
doesn't matter.
800-777-2907. It's SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Steve Gardner is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk to him about Major League Baseball. He's from USA Today. We'll talk to him about the series getting underway this afternoon in Major League Baseball, the divisional series. Oh, here's a really good story. I don't know. I knew this was coming. I just felt like it was coming, but Mike Florio's got this at ProFootballTalk.com. Sam Boyd Stadium in Las Vegas will not be a temporary option for the Raiders when they move there. The Raiders are set to exit Oakland after this season. When Oakland, the city of Oakland, the city of Oakland will file a lawsuit against the Raiders. So the Raiders will need a new home for 2019. However, Michael Gelkin of the Las Vegas Review-Journal is reporting that Sam Boyd Stadium, that's where the UNLV Rebels play in Las Vegas, that's also where the XFL team played, will not be the venue in which the Raiders will play until their new stadium is complete and built. So 2019, guess what, Ron? The Raiders need a home, and it is not going to be in Las Vegas because there is no place for them to play. They could play in San Antonio, maybe. If the San Francisco 49ers find it in their heart to let them use Levi Stadium, that could be an option. Or get this, what about Los Angeles? Playing in Los Angeles. Where are they going to play? The Rose Bowl? Where are you going to play if you go to Los Angeles? You going to borrow the Coliseum again? You going to borrow the StubHub Center?
Well, maybe they'll just
make arrangements there. What are you going to do?
They're going to have a home game this weekend, so maybe just wait and see how that looks.
Take a look at that. How that's going to look on TV.
No, I think it'd be more fantastic if all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, we need a stadium. You know, there's a pretty big stadium that we can use for 1 year just south of L.A.
Yeah, why not? You know what? It's completely. That's a great point.
Go play at the Chargers.
That's a great point. Down there for. Raiders are going to be homeless. I knew they weren't going to play at Sam Boyd Stadium. There's no way that was going to happen. Yeah, now the Raiders are waiting for this.
San Antonio is interesting.
San Antonio is interesting. Is San Antonio, and I've been there once, is San Antonio a big enough place to have an NFL team?
Permanently?
Permanently? Like, remember when they were toying the idea of going there permanently?
Yeah.
I remember thinking, is that big enough? Is that city big enough to house a real NFL team?
Well,
seems like a small market.
It's a small market, but it's Texas. So football reigns supreme here. But the thing is, Jerry Jones would never allow it because that's cowboy country.
Right.
You know, San Antonio, I mean, if you go to the mall that's right there, right next to the Riverwalk, and it's the big mall right next to the Alamo. There's a huge, huge cowboy store there. And stores, everything is cowboy gear. Jerry Jones is going to give up that market. You know, San Antonio, I mean, they're cowboy crazy. They don't.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't care about the Texans at all.
That's a good point. Michael Gelkin, who writes the article at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, his name sounded really familiar to me, and I kept going, where do I know that? And now I realize I have had him on my programs over the years many times. He covered the Chargers in San Diego, and now has moved to Las Vegas, where he's going to be the beat writer for the Raiders. Good for him. Yep, good for him. But Raiders do not have a home for next year. They won't be playing in the college stadium known as Sam Boyd Stadium on the eastern side of Las Vegas.
So we might have
Oakland.
The last home game in Oakland might have been the last game NFL game played on a baseball field.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's kind of sad to think about it. It's the end of an era.
Funny, Mike.
You had mentioned earlier the Rams sharing a stadium with the Angels, and they were one of the ones who played on a baseball. I mean, for years, how many NFL teams played on baseball fields?
Remember Three Rivers Stadium? That was a Pirates and Steelers stadium. Riverfront Stadium was the Reds and the Bengals. Philadelphia played. I mean, they were all of those ashtray looking stadiums back in the 70s. Remember?
Yep.
They all, like Busch Stadium in St. Louis. They had, I mean, it was all these old type of cookie cutter, same looking round toilet bowl looking stadiums. That were multi-stadiums, and I'm sure they were sold with that idea in mind. Why take up valuable land when you don't have to? These stadiums are multi-purpose. Everybody went crazy, and they used that concrete AstroTurf that would tear your skin off.
Yes.
Remember that?
Oh, do I?
Yeah, it was so funny. My daughter, the game with the Raiders when it was on, she's like, why is there dirt on the field? And I said, that's not dirt, honey. That's a baseball diamond. Why is there a baseball diamond on the field? Because that's where the Raiders play with the Oakland A's. I know you're young enough to not know that opportunity or that possibility with all sorts of stadiums being built around the country. Thank you, vacant LA. But the reality of it is that they're the only holdouts.
Yeah, and still play where there's stupid infield dirt.
That was the norm. I mean, you know, Seattle, both Mariners and Seahawks playing in the Kingdom.
Yeah, Dolphins and Marlins played at Joe Robbie Stadium for a number of years together.
No, it's just the norm to have a baseball field, and you know, it's usually around mid-October where you saw the dirt get covered up, and it was just grass from then on out.
Yep, before the Georgia Dome was built, Falcons used to play where the Braves played. That was old, like with Steve Barkowski, but that's going back years.
See, that's how we grew up. That was real man football.
That's basically how we grew up. Shoot, I remember being a kid, I mean a little kid, and seeing NBC NFL, seeing goalposts bending in the wind in Minnesota when they used to play outdoors before they went inside to the Metrodome, the Hubert Humphrey Metrodome. But I remember they used to play outdoors. I mean, I was a little kid back then, and I remember it'd be freezing. And then they started moving to the dome. But where that stadium used to be is where the Mall of America is.
Okay.
In Minnesota, where that old Vikings outdoor stadium used to be. And, yeah, I mean, that's just how it was, man. They just played in these stadiums. They weren't, you know.
No, it was funny. My son the other day, we were watching, and it was Canadian Football League highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just amazed. He's like, Dad, why is the goalpost so close? Why is it at the front of the end zone? And I just sat there. I was like, yeah, that used to be the norm. I said, the other thing you got to notice too, it wasn't the goalpost being at the front. It was how large the end zone actually is.
Oh, okay, yeah. Metric system? Did you pull out the metric system?
No. But isn't the Canadian Football League, the end zone's like 20 yards, right?
Yeah, it's bigger, yeah.
Man, imagine that. That'd be a game changer and a half if you threw that in the NFL.
You brought up the goalposts. I mean, when they moved the goalposts from the front to the back, think about the strategic change that went on with the league. That's 10 yards and that you were going to have to get. Going to have to continue to get on an offensive series that your kicker was going to need. Your kicker wasn't all of a sudden going to develop a stronger leg. I mean, his range was his range, right? Whether the goalpost was up front or 10 yards back. So you were going to have to adjust your offensive philosophy to get him those extra 10 yards if you wanted to kick a field goal.
I wish I could hear the announcers the first season. Say, no,
when that was back, yeah.
He's setting up for a 35-yard. No, wait, not 35. Wait. 45-yarder now.
Can you imagine like the announcers back then like, you know, it was so much easier when I just used to have to add like 7. Now you're asking me to add 17. That's a little bit more work than I have to do, right? I mean, now I got to carry that one. God. And I don't think I can. That's going to be very difficult for. You know what? I need somebody on staff at all games that just does that math for me. So the ball's at the 24-yard line. What is it? It's a 60-yard field goal? I don't know. Right? I mean, what's 20 plus 17? I mean, 100? What is that? I need somebody next to me to do the math for me. This is either a 95-yard field goal or a 34-yard field. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, you know what? It's only temporary.
Yeah, they'll go back to the old ways.
They'll go back to it after a year.
This isn't going to work. Yeah, talk about safety.
Keep the end zone at the front of the touchdown. Right when you first get in, you need to have a goalpost to run into. That's how you know you're in there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. People ran routes around a post. Around a post that was in the middle. What is it? I mean, that's what we did when we were kids. There was the light post. You ran behind the light post.
Well, that was our end zone.
That was our end zone.
You're looking, when you're playing street football, it's like, okay, the ends, that street light, that's one touchdown, and you know, Mrs. Johnson's mailbox, that's the other touchdown.
That's the other one. That's
and then
the
there was
one.
This big imaginary line that went across, but the end zone was like 50 yards. Didn't matter.
Oh, boy. Man, oh, man. Good
street
old
ball.
Days
I'm surprised
football.
That I survived. I played street ball, football in the streets so much. And now I would be scared to death to have my own kids do it.
My brother still reminds me.
No. Don't two-hand touch.
No, my brother still reminds me of the time we were playing a backyard game. And my brother and I normally didn't play on the same team because we didn't really, you know, we didn't dig each other that much enough to play on the same team. But one time we did. And I was the quarterback, and he was a wide receiver, and we were like probably 13, maybe 12 or 13 at the time. And I threw a pass, and I led him right to a tree, and he didn't see the tree.
Nice.
I mean, I threw it. He was running right across the end zone. I led him perfectly. He caught the ball. Boom! Hit a tree directly into a tree. And he still reminds me to this day when we hang out that I let him into that trick.
Of course. You can't let that go.
He was like, yo, I almost got killed trying to catch that football for you.
No, I had a similar experience, except I was your brother in that scenario.
Oh, yeah?
I wasn't led into a tree. I got tackled by a parked car.
Oh, did you?
That car came up. Yeah. I swear to God, that car came up out of nowhere. It had been driving and then stopped. You know, that's what I, because I ran a crisp route. And yeah, my friend just threw a good ball, and next thing I know, I was flopping over the hood.
Yep, that's fantastic. That's the best. Well, that's how they used to do it in the day with that goalpost sticking there on the 0 yard line.
Just the passing plays that have changed since then too. Like, you know, now you kind of throw up a little fade route to the corner of the end zone. You couldn't really do that then.
No, exactly. You got these poles in the way, man. They're blocking your view.
Say, hey guys, I'm going to drop this. It's going to go up over the upright. She's going to drop right below the upright.
Yep. Just think, at some point in the history of this game, a guy hit that pole head on with his leather helmet. Ah, the league.
And they didn't worry about CTE then.
They didn't worry about CTE, that is right. We'll talk Major League Baseball coming up. Steve Gardner, USA Today. Next on the NL and ALDSs.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 8 teams, 4 series, Major League Baseball playoffs. After the wild card matchups are done, locked in. Steve Gardner, USA Today, joining us on our BetDSI.com inside line. He'll talk some Major League Baseball. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. All right, let's start with the first game out of the gates. It'll be Colorado and Milwaukee. I like these teams. They're spunky and fun. A lot of people don't know much about them. They're not on these national stages. But when you look at these two teams and the way these two teams got here, sort of playing out that season and getting into position, what's the X factor here between these two teams?
Well, I think it's Milwaukee's bullpen, which has been so good this season. And the playoffs, you know, you rely a lot more on the bullpen, and especially Milwaukee's starting staff is not really as good as Colorado's, you know, which is an odd thing to say about the Rockies' starting pitching staff, but that's what it is. And I think the bullpen with Josh Hader, you know, as an X factor in the playoffs, a lot like we've seen Andrew Miller be in previous years, I think that's where this game is going to be won and lost, is in those sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning, where the games can be so volatile after the starting pitchers leave.
I remember I covered the Rockies early in the 2000s, and there was always the mile high factor and the home field advantage playing at that place. It seems to be lessened over the years, but is there still a serious advantage for the Rockies playing in Denver?
It is, and I think one of the things, this year's Rockies team is not really that great offensively, but when you play in Coors Field, you know, the expansive outfield, not only, you know, the ball flying, and that's mitigated a little bit by the effect of the humidor, but just the fact that there's so much outfield ground to cover. And I think one of the things that helps the Brewers there is their defense with Lorenzo Cain in center field and Christian Yelich as well. That's a defense that can cover some ground. So the Rockies can do that as well, but I think that's one of the things that we'll be watching, because it's not just you slug and hit home runs there in Coors Field. It's the doubles and the triples and things like that that can really kill you.
We were talking about this earlier about Christian Yelich. A lot of guys who end up becoming an MVP or have MVP type of years, You can see it coming. They start having really good seasons and they don't win the award, and they have another good season, don't win the award. A lot of people didn't know about Christian Yelich when he was playing in Miami. Did you guys who cover this game, did you see that kind of potential in him when he was with the Marlins?
I think, yes, to answer your question. One of the things is that, you know, talking about ballpark factors, Marlins Park is not the greatest for home runs and offense, although when Giancarlo Stanton is somewhere, he can hit the ball in any ballpark. But one of the things is that Milwaukee has a shorter porch down the right field line, and Christian Yelich, you know, in Miami was more of a speed guy, steal bases, and hit a few home runs. In Milwaukee, you know, he had 36 home runs this year, and a lot of that was helped out by the fact that, you know, once you get the ball in the air in Milwaukee and hit it out towards right field, that ball will go and it'll get out. And he had an incredible percentage of his fly balls go for home runs this year. I don't think it can be sustained, but the way that he's done that, he's been able to be so productive this season. You could sort of see that he might have been a batting champion in waiting, but an MVP candidate like this, that's taking your game to the next level.
I don't want to take anything away from the Atlanta Braves. You win 90 games, you win 90 games. But Steve, I don't know how good are they. I look at their pitching rotation. I see Julio Teheran is still on the team. Sean Newcomb, I guess, had a good year. Mike Foltynewicz is pretty good. They don't stand out to me as stoppers or anything like that. I know they've got some young talent. But, and again, I don't want to diminish their accomplishment, but did they almost win this by default because we thought the Nationals would be good and we thought the Phillies would be fighting until the end?
I think that's part of it, and this is a very young team. You know, you talk about offensively, Ozzy Albies at second base and Ronald Acuna. You know, those guys are very young, and I don't think that that the experts looking at them at the beginning of the year could expect to see the leap that those guys took in upping their performance. And I think that's one of the things that has made Atlanta as good as it's been. You put those guys with veterans like, you know, Freddie Freeman and a great season for Nick Markakis. That's when it kicked this team into overdrive. And the pitching has been okay. It hasn't been lights out or anything like that. But Foltynewicz has had a fantastic year. And when you can get, you know, some decent pitching and the offense just kicking it in like they have, that's how they've been able to prey on what turned out to be a disappointing Nationals team and a Phillies team that faded there at the end. So, yeah, I think they've had a lot less drama, certainly, than any other team in the National League going down the stretch, because they at least knew exactly where they were going to be and when they would be playing in the playoffs.
The Dodgers are going with Rua in Game 1 so they can go to Kershaw in Game 2. I like that because Rua's been pitching well since coming off the DL. Do the Braves match up well against the Dodgers when you look at the lineups to lineups?
I think because of the Dodgers' reliance on left-handed pitching and the fact that the Braves hit lefties pretty well, I think that makes it a lot more competitive than maybe one might think going into this with the Dodgers have all the experience and stars at pretty much every position, and the Braves are young and up and coming. So I think that will be the interesting thing. Still, Clayton Kershaw starting in Game 2 will be able to go in Game 5 if needed. So it's not like moving him back one game really has an impact on whether or how he can be used in this series. I expect it will go 5 games. I really do, and I think that's going to ultimately be the difference. Is Clayton Kershaw, who's had his ups and downs in the postseason, I think finally is the guy that the Dodgers can rely on and will be able to rely on in this series.
All right, Yankees and Red Sox. I think a lot of people were hoping to get this. They get it, a 5-game series that starts Friday at Fenway Park. You know, you can look at the matchups and all the games they played, and they seem even. But when I look at the Red Sox, I see a team that is just built better than the Yankees. But if I'm the Yankees, is it home runs or nothing, or do I have more here that can challenge Boston?
Well, I think one of the things that the Yankees do have is a better bullpen overall than the Red Sox do. And the big question for me with Boston, and it's been a fantastic season for them for sure, but is Chris Sale 100% is the real key? Because if you go through the starting rotations, you know, one by one, I think the Yankees match up fairly well with the Red Sox. Now, Luis Severino has already been used in the wild card game, so they won't be able to go to him right away. But, you know, J-Hap is a left-hander who is given, you know, if anything has given the Red Sox a little bit of trouble, it's J-Hap has been one of those left-handers that has been able to do that. So this will be an interesting thing. You know, Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez have been such a powerful 1-2 punch. It's been enough pretty much to knock every other team out so far this season. The Yankees won't go quietly, though, and I think that's what makes this series so interesting. And it's a shame that it's only going to be 5 games because these two are real heavyweights.
I had a feeling last night, because a lot of times you get these teams and they need that one player that's the spark. He's over exuberant. He gets a big hit. He's kind of hot at the plate. It seems like Luke Voit is that guy for the Yankees. Am I reading that correctly?
I'll tell you what. He is the real X factor, I think, in this postseason for the Yankees, certainly, because it was one of those things. The Yankees felt like Greg Bird was their guy at first base, and all of a sudden Luke Voit comes over from the St. Louis Cardinals and just starts hitting everything in sight. And he did. That triple that he hit and the exuberance that he showed, it was pretty interesting, and it seems like almost out of character a little bit for a Yankees team that has, you know, a mild-mannered Aaron Judge, and Giancarlo Stanton doesn't really get pumped up too much either. I think that's an interesting thing that he's added to the mix here, and he's certainly done it with his performance as well. I don't think anybody has been a hotter hitter in September or here in early October than Luke Voit has.
Yeah, and by the way, his run to third base to home plate, he's chugging along, sliding in. I give him all the credit in the world for trying to get that, trying to tag that base. That was pretty impressive.
He's you know, a guy that hasn't really gotten his shot, and now he has, and he's making the most of it, and certainly not shrinking from the postseason or the New York spotlight.
As far as Boston goes, there's a lot of pressure when you win that many games in a city like that that says, we don't care what that total is, you better win the World Series. This team seems loose, but I don't know them well. Is that a factor here with the Red Sox?
It's hard to say because, you know, you've got a first-year manager in Alex Cora, and we haven't really seen, I mean, the way that the Red Sox got off to such a great start, and there was a while there where the Yankees were going neck and neck with them, and then Boston just pulled away. We haven't really seen the Red Sox under a stressful situation for a while now. And, yeah, it's easy to be loose when that's the case. Yeah. But now that's the playoffs. What you've done in the regular season, as you mentioned, does not matter. It's win the title or bust, and we think of teams that have had amazing regular seasons, going back to those Seattle Mariners in 2001 that did not make the World Series. So, yeah, I think it's important. Certainly in Boston, you need to win, and they've become accustomed to winning lately. So it's very important, and we will see what kind of a manager Alex Cora is in these playoffs, because the spotlight is going to be even more intense on him.
When you look at the Astros from last year to this year, comparing these two teams, where they come in, some personnel has changed, but most of it has remained the same. Better than last year, a little worse, about the same. How do you evaluate this year's Houston team?
I think they're better, to tell you the truth. I mean, Alex Bregman has been the playoff Alex Bregman from last year all season long. The fact is that the Astros, they're getting healthy too, and I think that's important because they've dealt with some injuries to Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa this season. And now with those guys getting healthy, I think it looks to me like a better team. We have a little bit more certainty in how the bullpen is going to work. You remember last year when Ken Giles was giving up an awful lot of runs and the Astros had to piecemeal the end of the games together. I don't think we'll see them do that this year, and things are a little bit more settled, and the starting rotation is a little bit more settled as well. So I think this is a very, very good Astros team, and that's why these playoffs are going to be so much fun, because the Astros are better than they were last year, and I think the Indians are better, and the Red Sox are certainly better. So this American League playoff especially is going to be great.
Absolutely. Steve Gardner, USA Today, covering Major League Baseball. Really appreciate your time, my friend. Hope to get you on soon again. That was great.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Look forward to the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Gardner on our BetDSI Inside Line. Our guests are sponsored by BetDSI.com. Use the promo code WIN125 to get 125% on your first deposit. That's right, 125% on your first deposit. Get all the plays on the Inside Line at BetDSI.com. Good stuff from Steve Gardner covering Major League Baseball. We'll come back, wrap up this hour, and give us our thoughts as the playoffs begin in baseball next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I make the prediction, Ron. Your World Series for 2019 is going to be what?
I'm thinking it's going to be a repeat, Dodgers-Astros.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards that, too. I think it's going to be Astros and Milwaukee. I think the Brewers are scrappy, and I'll take
all right,
them.
I like that. That one would be fun.
And I think the Brewers are going to beat the Dodgers, and the Astros are going to beat the Red Sox in seven games. That is going to be mind-boggling electric at Fenway Park.
But then who comes out on top?
I think the Astros repeat.
The Astros repeat?
I think the Astros
repeat. I'm leaning that way, too. Well, yeah. I mean, all along I've said, whoever wins the American League Championship Series, that's your World Series champion.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's much better.
And like we've been saying, it's going to either be the Astros or the Red Sox. And that, I believe, will be your World Series champion. Top to bottom, they're the best teams all the way around.
You know what? I think that my thing with the Yankees is I think the Yankees could give Boston a good scare, but I also could see them getting swept. I mean, I really can. I could see Aaron Judge swinging at everything and just striking out, and the Red Sox pitching just mowing them down, and there's nothing. There's no life to the bats, and they fall behind early, and then they get rocked. See, that's the scary thing about the Red Sox, man, is that you could get them for like six innings, and then bam, they'll put up seven. Like in the bottom of the, good they are.
And that's what the Astros did last year.
Yeah, the Astros did the exact same thing.
And
right.
So the Astros haven't been really doing that this year. Now, I will say this, given the teams that are in the playoffs, if there is a National League team that could really make some noise or disrupt everything, it is the Brewers.
Yep, absolutely.
I think they're scrappy enough. They're maybe, it's that whole idea, like they're not disciplined. They don't know their role. In this, the Milwaukee Brewers are not supposed to be where they're supposed to be right now, and they don't understand that their role is, you know, hey, you guys are a year away from where you're supposed to be, or two years away from where you're supposed to be.
No kidding.
And it's almost like disrespectful that they're in the playoffs, and I can see them making a run all the way through.
Yeah, and they built that bullpen up like Steve mentioned. Their bullpen's really good, and when you get to the, you know, it's funny, like in we talk about this in basketball all the time. When you get to the playoffs, you shorten your bench. In the NBA, for example, and in Major League Baseball, you use everybody, right? You get a roster, you get your postseason roster, you tighten up your postseason roster, but you use everybody, and that includes pitchers. And you'll bring in guys for one batter, and then you'll bring in another guy for one batter, and that's why the games are 4 hours long, and Milwaukee can do that. Other teams are not comfortable doing that, but Milwaukee is going to be comfortable doing that. I think the Yankees are going to be very comfortable doing that. I don't think the Red Sox are at all. I think he's absolutely right. I think the Red Sox have that trouble from mid-relief to close, and I think that could be problematic. The thing that saves Boston from having to do that is their ability to put seven runs on the board in the fifth inning. Right. I mean, like the fact that they may not have to do that because they have the ability with their bats to get out of close games by just pounding the crap out of your pitching and then annihilating you and blowing you out. And what was a 2-1 close game turns into a 12-2 rout and you're down 0-2.
Just beat you into submission.
Exactly. Tony D, Ron Culver, we're SB Nation AM.